history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that the rest of us really need to hear. You're never going to hear them unless you take a little time to ask a few questions and listen to what comes back our way. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. With yet another anniversary, the 77th of the Pearl Harbor attack coming up, thought it would be great to hear from someone who was there. There aren't too many left, especially those who are over a century. And George Vandersloos of Fresno, California, is 102. He'll turn 103 in May. For the last couple years, he's lived here at the beautiful California Veterans Home, home to about 300 vets in Fresno, California. But you grew up in a much different climate. Minneapolis, Minnesota. What was your childhood like there 100 years ago?
It was a cold one. my thinking was hockey, skiing, ski jumping. That was my life. I think ski jumping was my favorite. But I played hockey, and I played all the sports that go along with the winter. The service life took the bulk of my growing up years away from me.
6 years in the Marine Corps. But I'm interested, before that Great Depression era, I mean, my generation, your children and grandchildren's generations, I don't know if any of us understand what life was like back then. Do you look back and marvel at some of the things you had to deal with or the way things were?
Well, the thing that stands out is the one word, depression. We went into the depression, I guess, and came out of it. But it went on for a lot of long time. Kind of a scary type thing. I mean, everything was so uncertain. My dad was a newspaper man. He worked for the Star. He worked there for years, strictly a newspaper man.
Did you have to make do with less or get used to not having everything you wanted?
Oh, you bet. I often think of those years. They were rough years. I mean, very little money. Our neighborhood in Minneapolis, it was a northeast neighborhood, predominantly Polish. It was a rough neighborhood. Me, the one Dutchman, I didn't fit in there too well for quite a while. I ended up at Edison and graduated Edison High School. And shortly after that, I was in the CCC camp. I spent about a year up in northern Minnesota, near Deer River, up in that country. Out of Bena, Minnesota, it was delightful. We did work. And we worked pretty hard, clearing out brush, thinning out trees. I went back up there 3-4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. The scars are still there. I mean, some of these forests, birch trees. There was a big grove of those. We got in there and thinned them out. Oh, it was really good work. And in my return there years later, it's still there, still thinned out. It looks great. In the meantime, my mother passed away. I left the camp and came on down. And there's been a lot of crazy things happen to me. I ended up going to work for maybe a year at the Minneapolis Journal. It was a daily paper. I was learning the trade. Worked in the composing room. Did odd jobs. Like number one was making corrections in the type. We had one room there where they edited. They marked all the mistakes and one thing and another. And I would pass it out to the linotype operators, and then I would make corrections. It was very interesting. My dad, of course, got me the job.
Was it March of 1940 you decided to join the Marine Corps?
March 1st of 40, yep.
What were you thinking?
I wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking, or I wouldn't have done it. A buddy and I were prancing downtown one day, walking. Everything was walked. We had no cars. We walked by the Marine Corps office, and he said, Never forget his name. Winston Fisher was his name. I understand he was killed on Normandy in later years. But I ended up by, they said, well, you might as well take an examination too. And I said, well, I have no intention of joining your outfit. And we kind of joked back and forth. This friend of mine, Winston Fisher, he failed the test. He go home and eat more beans or something. I forget what they said. But I left there. They were trying to get me to take an examination and one thing. I'll see you later. So the next morning, there the recruiting officer is standing at my door. I just wanted to have another little chat with you, man, and see if you could. We need men like you in the outfit. Men like me? So to make a long story short, he had me sign up. From there on out, it's history. They shipped me out of Minneapolis down to San Diego, and I went into training. So 6 years later, I was a civilian again. But quite an experience.
Well, yeah, and I've heard some stories. And again, this is all before Pearl Harbor. So these guys who are training you are the old breed of Marines, the guys who are pretty tough, pretty hardened. How did they treat that kid from Minneapolis?
You know, I tell you, this northeast Minneapolis, we were not a bunch of sissies. We were a bunch of tough nuts ourselves. So, no, I managed everything pretty well. Nobody gave me too much lip. It was quite an era. There were times where you just wondered whether it was all worth it.
Let's talk about December 7th. How long had you been there as a Marine attached to the cruiser USS Honolulu?
I went over there on the Honolulu. The Honolulu came around from the East Coast. It came on through the canal and up into Long Beach, California. I went aboard there. We left there and ended up in Pearl Harbor. We operated out of Pearl Harbor.
And what were your duties on the ship?
I was a gunner on the 525s. That's a, shall we say, a gun that's shooting planes down. And then I was put into a turret. These were 6-inch guns. I put most of my time in that turret. It was an interesting job. Big 6-inch. There was nothing sissy about those. I mean, we made big holes.
And loud noises.
Yeah, you bet.
The time you spent in Hawaii before December 7th, any highlights of that time there on Oahu?
Beautiful. We just had a picnic. Yeah. I really enjoyed every minute of it. I made a lot of acquaintances there. December 7th, 1941.
What do you remember about that Sunday morning?
Well, the color guard always goes up on the quarter deck with his group, and we raise the flag. So December 7th, there we were up on the deck. And it was very strange how it transpired. It ended up that the plane started coming in. They're just buzzing us, just almost, I thought they were going to land on us. And from our ship, the planes, those jet planes, dropped down to water level and headed for all the warships. It was right across from us. So they really tore them up, of course. We all know that. But we took a couple of nicks. We got our compartment flooded out. They dropped a bomb on the deck we were tied to, and it ricocheted and went into the side of our ship. And, of course, it would happen that picking on my compartment, it went through our compartment. So after the bombing, they carried on quite a while. It was not a... It was short-lived, but it was a lot longer than you think. I went down below. I got out of the turret. I was going to get some gas masks. The word was passed that there undoubtedly would be a gas attack. So I left the turret, started down through the hatches, and they were all sealed. They were all boggled down, and I was on the second deck down. And by then, we had, I was wading in water, up to my knees, not any more than that. It was a gloomy old compartment when I went through it. And I was collecting the gas masks. That's what I went there down there for to begin with. And we had our gas masks hanging above our bunks. So I'm hanging gas masks on me and starting back up. And then the word was passed there was a gas attack. I mean, you know, there was just rumors flying around. They didn't have any gas attacks at all. It was just we wanted to be prepared. I could almost smell the stuff, but there wasn't any.
Well, I imagine that this throws all your bearings and sensibilities out of whack because it's so unexpected. And when you're on the deck raising that flag and you see that first plane, what was your first thought?
Well, it was kind of unbelievable. It was surreal. It was hard to believe. And boy, they dipped down. I mean, you could, his big old teeth hanging out of his head, he was just grinning from ear to ear. And he kind of dipped his wings. And he came so close to hitting our ship. He was quite a pilot. And then he straightened out and he got right down at the waterline and was heading for the Arizona and that group of ships. And we were right across from them. Then I realized they weren't there for the fun of it.
You saw him come down right over your ship, and your eyes followed him as he headed toward Battleship Row and dropped that first bomb.
Yep. In fact, when he came over our ship, I mean, he could have landed on it. He was that close to us. I can remember. It sounds silly, but it's the truth. Him grinning. Uh-huh. He had a grin on his face. Yeah, that was what a day.
A day you can tell he still remembers quite clearly, 77 years later, and a date that has indeed lived in infamy. 102-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor George Vandersloos is our guest today. You can find photos of him then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. When we come back, more of what he experienced on December 7th, not to mention the rest of the war. He'd go on to make landings with the 4th Marine Division at Saipan, Tinian, and Iwo Jima, among others. We'll get to that, and we will revisit FDR's famous Pearl Harbor speech when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.